Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking ahead to next month's UK general election. We'll ask our panel of experts what's dominating their thoughts and hear their view on how the early jockeying for position over Brexit talks is faring and what that might mean for investors Europe and worldwide. We'll hear more about how ongoing political volatility and unpredictability are affecting both markets and investment strategy, and we'll ask whether suggestions that certain pollsters, analysts, and yes, maybe even economists are out of step with demographic or political realities holds water. We start with Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management. Looking ahead to next month's general election in the UK, what's dominating his thinking? Two key points, explains Paul.
Firstly, the Prime Minister clearly wishes to increase the size of the government's majority, and that will enable the government to pursue perhaps a somewhat clearer position with regards to exit negotiations. It means that they can withstand rebellion from within the Conservative Party, which has always been a risk as the Conservative Party is very divided over the topic of Europe. The second thing is one of these obscure constitutional issues that the British Constitution excels at, called the Salisbury Convention. And the Salisbury Convention says that the House of Lords should not oppose legislation that was included in the government's election manifesto. Now, of course, when David Cameron was Prime Minister, he didn't have leaving the EU in his manifesto. Theresa May, as Prime Minister, will have a detailed plan for leaving the EU in her manifesto. What this means is that until now, the House of Lords has been a potential source of opposition for the government's plans to leave the EU. Under the Salisbury Convention, that opposition is now not possible, and the government will therefore find it easier to get legislation through the House of Commons.
And in UK election terms, what dominates the thoughts of Themis Themistocleous, head of the European Investment Office at UBS Wealth Management?
It's an interesting situation because the elections themselves in some ways are all about how much of majority would the Conservatives manage to achieve. Because I don't think it's a question of who is going to win the elections, but it's more the majority lead. The majority lead is important from Theresa May's point of view, because that can strengthen her hand in the Brexit negotiations, which is a much, much bigger issue for the UK right now. And obviously, if she can achieve, let's say, 50, 80, 100 seat majority, that in some ways will strengthen her hand, more so with the Conservative Party rather than the European partners. Because in some ways, if you look at what is the opposition in the UK, and you can argue maybe the main opposition is the backbenchers Conservatives.
What does Dean Turner, economist and director in the UBS UK CIO, make of the UK general election build-up? Is Brexit still the only game in town politically in the UK right now?
I think that's quite a fair assessment. I mean, in my mind, the only debate that needs to be settled with this general election is how big a majority Theresa May ends up with come June the 9th. Why that's important is it really is all about the Brexit negotiations, which should start formally soon after the election.
On the Brexit theme, we asked Bloomberg's Ewan Potts how concerned investors are about the way that Brexit talks are starting out and what the implications of that might be.
We entered 2017 with political risk firmly on investors' agendas. First, we had the known unknowns, the far right in the Dutch elections, the rise of Le Pen in France, and looking ahead, Merkel re-standing in Germany. June 2017 features an unknown unknown, Theresa May's snap election, an election so secret that many of her own cabinets reportedly didn't even know about it. Now, the announcement saw an immediate jump in the pound. The state of the political parties in the UK, at least according to the opinion polls, means that markets think May is almost certain to win. And of course, markets like certainty. Now, markets also prefer May's Conservative Party's perceived fiscal discipline. They're not very keen on Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party. I think the interesting question is how this plays into the Brexit talks. Now, the UK's Prime Minister said that no deal is better than a bad deal. But while nobody wants a bad deal, I think markets would see no deal at all, the UK crashing out of the EU, as bad news for both sides. I think they see that as a risk factor. In terms of how the talks are going, well, it's very early days, of course, but certainly there's been some tense words from both sides. I think it will be interesting to see how June's election plays into these Brexit negotiations. Of course, Theresa May could have an increased mandate, which could give her more leverage with the EU. But it also, interestingly, I think it means that she's better able to ignore the hardline Brexiteers. There's perhaps three dozen people in her party who take a very, very hardline approach to EU. They're very anti-European. And at the moment, because of her small majority, she has to listen to those people. So perhaps with a bigger majority, she might be able to steer her own course.
How does Paul Donovan feel that the preliminary Brexit talks, or at least the early jockeying for position, has begun, and what might be the implications for investors?
The one impression that I have is that the perception of discussions and what is acceptable and what is not really is quite different in Europe versus the United Kingdom. What is politically acceptable, I think, is really quite divided at this stage. And that's even allowing for the fact that inevitably there's a lot of posturing at the start of the negotiation process. But I think that, you know, issues which are getting the British media and the British public excited or angry are very different from the issues which are animating Europe. So I think that there is still quite a large gulf that has to be negotiated between the two sides. At the same time, I think investors are prepared at this stage to wait and see. They are prepared to look at longer term trends that are emerging around negotiation stances and so on, rather than getting drawn into, you know, what is effectively the equivalent of a Twitter war over, you know, who said what over dinner and so forth.
We've certainly seen some pretty antagonistic language from Theresa May in Westminster and the likes of Jean-Claude Juncker in Brussels. So what, if anything, have we learned so far? Dean Turner, again.
I think the one thing we have learned is that these, if we didn't know it already, is that these negotiations are going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of difficult news flow for the markets to digest as the talks progress. And I think it also highlights the risk that, you know, these talks could break down. And there is a real possibility that the UK could end up without a deal. Now, I would caution on that, you know, the market reaction to this week's events has been relatively calm. I would suggest that what we're seeing is really posturing on both sides. And I'm sure both sides appreciate that, you know, there is a bit of electioneering taking place. So assuming that that all goes to plan for Theresa May and she gets returned with the kind of majority she's expecting, then that should strengthen her hand in negotiations and things should be able to proceed quite smoothly. But I think what we've certainly seen this week is we do need to keep an open mind about that.
Brexit talks have been proceeding in line with expectations to a degree, but there are some areas of worry when it comes to the implications for investors, explains Themistocleous.
Right from the beginning, when Brexit, after the referendum and the Brexit debate started, we always said that as we're going into negotiations and early stages of the negotiations, we got to see a lot of posturing from both parties because they would look to set out their positioning as they go into negotiations. And obviously, as negotiations progress, you got to have some convergence. Most probably, the noise will die down. Now we get into these stages of the early stages for negotiations. We get all the posturing, all the comments in the media, and then everybody gets panicking. They say, well, if this is what sets the tone for the negotiations, there's a pretty high probability that might not be a deal. But isn't that what we expected? Isn't that natural that as you go into negotiations, you start with extreme positions and then you work towards common ground? So I think to some extent is really what we expected to some extent. One area that does concern me a little bit is that some of this is happening through the newspapers and in the press. The worst case scenario is that negotiations do happen very much in the open and through the media. That does not bode well for an agreement at the end of the negotiation process, because it's a lot easier to achieve conceit in certain areas if you stand behind closed doors rather than in very much in the open. But I think the key of what will happen is most probably going to be, I don't know, 15, 18 months from now, because the process of negotiation, you go into it with your positions, and then over time, you still be converging. And I think the negotiators, if they think they still have 2 years to work towards a solution, I don't think they're going to achieve an agreement day one, because you hold out in terms of making concessions until much, much later. But I think 18 months from now, if there's no solution, which is not likely to be, then I think the markets will be start becoming a lot more wary. It is clearly a probability that there will be no solution. What is the probability of that? I don't know, maybe 20-30%. It's not a zero probability there will be no solution, because it is possible that politics overtake logic and there's no solution. But I still think that ultimately politicians are sensible people, and they would look to minimize the impact of Brexit, which would be good for both sides.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll ask whether in UK terms the laser focus on Brexit, whilst perhaps understandable, could lead us to miss other key narratives. Earlier, Ewan Pott spoke about political uncertainty and volatility. Next, we asked him whether pollsters, analysts, even economists might be out of step with demographic or political realities. Or are we through the worst in that respect?
Well, it will certainly be interesting to see how clear the polls are in the UK. In France, they have a very good track record of predicting elections, so we'll see. They say that it's almost certain Macron will win the election. We'll soon find out whether that's the case. And in the UK, I think there's such a big gap between Theresa May's Conservatives and the Labour Party that it would be an earthquake if she didn't win. But whether that's a big win or a small win, we don't really know that yet. And of course, whether the polls are exactly right or nearly right, we also don't know that, so that will be interesting to see.
And we'll have more on the outcome of today's poll in France on next week's programme. But as regards that suggestion from some that certain pollsters, analysts and economists are out of step with certain realities, is it at all fair? Or has this all been rather a period of adjustment? We've certainly had a pretty turbulent 2 or 3 years, as Dean Turner points out.
I think that criticism that was levelled a couple of years back would probably have been fair. Certainly, economists, pollsters did underappreciate the swell of populist sentiment. But that said, you know, we've been through quite a few events over the last 2 to 3 years. Therefore, I think our understanding of these events has improved. It's not perfect. It will never be perfect. That said, I think we are much more sensitive to these issues, and that is in itself feeding into the way we think about it and the way we think about investing portfolios.
Now, with the focus on France, the United Kingdom, and indeed on Germany later this year in election terms, what are the other narratives, or what should they be, in Paul Donovan's view, that we need to focus on?
One of the issues from a market perspective to remember is that international investors are more likely to overreact to politics than domestic investors are. So what that means is it's not just a case of, you know, where are the political events, it's also who actually influences the market price more, domestic or international investors. And what that means, I think, is that the United States is perhaps a little bit more vulnerable to market reactions to politics than is Europe, because there tends to be more international involvement in US markets, particularly things like the dollar. So I would argue that the ongoing debate about tax reform, the fact that the passage of Trump Care 2 through the House probably delays tax reform discussions, that may be something that causes a stronger reaction in financial markets. From the European side, I think because domestic investors are more important, there is going to be a more relaxed approach to political risk. Not that investors ignore it, but they won't overreact. What I think we will see in Europe after, you know, the next month or so is probably not a focus on Germany so much as a focus on Italy. Because the German election is not looking at potential extreme outcomes. It's a debate between the centre-left and the centre-right. Whereas in Italy, there is the potential, not necessarily the probability, but the possibility of more extreme outcomes coming through. And I think that's where investor attention will probably focus next.
So the key takeaways here might be that international investors are more likely to overreact to politics than domestic ones. And also, if we're interested in these slightly overlooked narratives, to set our sights perhaps on Italy. What about Dean Turner? If he agrees that a laser focus on Brexit is understandable, does he think it's right? And if not, what are the other narratives, or what should or could they be in his view?
Well, I think it's all tied in fairness. You know, to take it back to the economy, certainly the performance of the UK economy has been robust, and we don't expect to see performance drop off that much throughout the proceedings over the next couple of years. However, if the talks do turn out less favourable than expected, or better than expected. I mean, let's keep an open mind here. Things could certainly proceed a lot smoother, and both sides could come to an amicable agreement quite quickly, and that would, other things being equal, be quite positive. But ultimately, it is the Brexit talks that are going to have a very big influence on the performance of the UK economy over the next 24 months and beyond. But on your point about elsewhere in terms of the domestic agenda, I think we could argue that some things are being overlooked, but I would suggest that's more to do with government policy than underlying economic trends right now. I think the economic trends, certainly in the UK, that we're concerned about is going to be the impact of rising inflation and what that's going to do to real consumer incomes. And we're fully versed in the impacts of that because we're already seeing the impact come through in the first quarter of this year.
And what of the other narratives, some of which we might be ignoring at our peril, according to Ewan Potts?
Brexit is a massive deal for the European Union. It's a big deal not just for the UK, it's a big deal for the other 27 countries. And it will be very high on Macron's in tray. People say that Le Pen perhaps will be more sympathetic towards Brexit. Of course, she's very anti-EU herself. Macron is seen as pretty pro the European Union. So that's probably not good for the UK. But certainly, it is really the big story in town over the next 2 years.
And lastly, to Themis Themistocleus. With Brexit seemingly still the only game in town in the UK right now, then what are the other narratives, or what should they be?
Brexit is very much the big issue, because that is going to drive, to a large extent, what's going to happen to the economy in the next few years. So it is a big issue. I mean, in the background, there's other things that one should keep an eye on. And I think if you look at the surprises we had in elections around the world, if you look at the US, if you look at Brexit, if you look at what's happening in France, there is a question of populism and should we be worrying about that. But I think in some of the conversations I had with UK politicians in the recent past, I think everybody appreciates that whatever led to the decision on Brexit and some of the other surprises in other political elections, the governments have to address these core issues, the concerns of people, whether it's immigration, whether it's the wealth gap, whether other frustrations that the electorate has, they need to be addressed. But I think that is not really the main challenge currently for the UK. I think the big challenge is Brexit. How is that going to be managed? What is the relationship with Europe is going to be beyond Brexit?
And that's Themis Themistocleus bringing us to the end of this 135th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. We'll be hearing more from Paul, Themis and Dean next week when we ask what's next for France and the world following today's presidential election. In the meantime, listen again or find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.